So something like more than 2,000. I mean, this is just incredible to me. I don't know if you saw this over the weekend, but like 2,000 former federal prosecutors and folks have signed on to this letter calling for Billy Barr's resignation. And it's one of these things that you know, about damn time. But calling for his resignation over this Roger Stone sentencing situation, which is completely just insane to me. But here to share some thoughts on the letter and the statement, I've asked Renato Mariotti to come talk with us, former federal prosecutor and one of the more than 2,000 people who have signed on to this letter. Renato, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely, anytime.
So why is this important? Why is this statement important?
Well, what it shows is the deep concern that the DOJ community has, and the former DOJ lawyers and other officials who have these concerns. I mean, look, I'll tell you, Rick, that people who are former prosecutors really are generally very cautious about making public statements. I know a lot of people who are listening to this program are used to hearing people like me and other people that they see on TV talk who are former prosecutors, but we are really a very tiny sliver, okay? Most people who are practicing law out there who used to be at the DOJ, they're very careful about what they say. They don't want to, alienate any potential clients. A lot of them represent people against the Justice Department. They're very cautious. They're speaking out. Thousands of them are speaking out because they're really concerned about this attack on the rule of law in our country, the way in which Barr is acting essentially as a stooge for Trump, as opposed to actually doing justice as we're supposed to do in the Justice Department.
You know, I got a bunch of responses last week as I was talking about this, and everyone points to Eric Holder and they claim that Eric Holder did the exact same thing during the Obama term. Is that a fair assessment of what Eric Holder did during the Fast and Furious and some of the other things that were out there?
I don't think that's a fair characterization at all. I mean, what happened with Eric Holder with Fast and Furious is essentially, there was an argument made that the Obama administration withheld too many documents from Congress, and you can make that argument. The difference is that they actually provided large numbers of documents and witnesses to Congress, and they had privilege claims over some of them, but they actually asserted specific privilege claims and then went to court and litigated them. The difference between them and the Trump administration on that is the Trump administration just said, we're completely immune from everything. We're not going to produce any documents. We're not going to produce any witnesses. We are completely immune from everything, and we're essentially above Congress in these processes, even when Congress was in the midst of an impeachment battle with the president. Essentially, they said that was unconstitutional. Separate and apart from that, people point to, I think at one point Holder made a statement that he was Obama's wingman. I don't think that was a good statement for Holder to make. I agree that is an unfortunate phrase for him to use. And I think it's fair to say that in the past, some attorney generals have been close to the president, right? We had an attorney general who was the brother of a president at one point. People were widely critical at that point. For example, when Bobby Kennedy was appointed, they were critical of Mr. Holder's statements. But none of them have taken actions like we've seen here, where they're literally intervening personally to help the president's close friend. And yeah. I think that's what concerns former prosecutors.
Yeah, has that ever happened before? Because I've asked the question to a number of people. Has this popped up before, where you've got the attorney general stepping in and saying, no, you don't do this, or no, this is too much, or has this? I guess, how unusual is this? Let's start with that.
Yeah, I will say it's unheard of for the department to overturn a sentencing recommendation of line prosecutors, period. In other words, prosecutors who work on a case come out and they say to the judge, here's what we think the sentence should be. And that happens in every case. And I have never heard of prosecutors on one day saying, we think the sentence should be whatever. And then the next day, literally one day later, the Department of Justice saying, no, we got it wrong yesterday. I've never heard of such a thing. I don't, and no other prosecutor that I've spoken to has ever heard of such a thing. And it's fairly obvious, based on everything that was revealed publicly, that department senior leadership overruled the prosecutors in this case, all of whom resigned. It's something that's just totally unheard of. And the Department of Justice prosecutes over 60,000 people a year. I am all for having sentencing reform. I'm all for advocating for lower sentences when they're appropriate. But let's face it. It's not like the Department of Justice leadership was intervening here because Roger Stone was some, you know, special case. It's because, you know, that of a special need who merited a lower sentence. They were intervening here because he was a friend of the president.
Yeah. No, it's that simple. And it's one of those things that you cannot have a judicial system that does this. I mean, this is, and I think you guys in the statement were very clear about that. At one point you wrote, governments that use enormous power of law enforcement to punish their enemies and reward their allies are not constitutional republics, they're autocracies. And this is, you know, kind of where a lot of people are looking at this moment as, oh, wait a second, we're moving down that authoritarian path.
Yeah, what's concerning to me is the Trump administration is saying that and Trump and his allies are arguing that the DOJ is this highly politicized department that goes after Trump and his cadre, and then which I don't believe is the case. In fact, I think when they have broken the law, it's because the reason they've been investigated is because they in fact have done something wrong. People like Manafort and Cohen and Flynn and others, and then what they're doing is they're using DOJ as a political instrument, and it's essentially eroding public confidence in the Justice Department at all. I don't see going forward how people can feel confident about an investigation or a prosecution of a political figure, because what they're going to see is, you know, they see that, for example, people that Trump claims are his enemies, like McCabe, are having, even when they aren't getting prosecuted, are having intense scrutiny placed on them, Comey, McCabe, Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and others, and then his friends are getting special treatment.
Yeah, and not to mention you've got a judicial system now that's being packed with ideologues and sycophants instead of, you know, qualified people. And there have been a number of folks that Trump has nominated or they've put into position that's literally been unqualified.
Well, I will say that, you know, there's certainly reason to be concerned about judges. What I was one of the people, as this letter was being developed, that was very much advocated for keeping it narrow. This
right.
letter was very narrow because I think there's broad agreement on this point. And, you know, I agree. I happen to share some of the concerns that you have regarding judges on the letter and in the DOJ community. The focus has really been on the way that Barr has been handling himself.
No, and in this letter, yeah. You're calling for his resignation. Now, obviously,
correct.
As you point out in the letter, it's not going to happen. But the fact that you got more than 2,000 former prosecutors and people who've worked for the Department of Justice, to, as you've said, you know, to come out in public and say this guy's got to go is really an impressive thing.
I'm frankly surprised. And when this was only developed a few days ago, and it hasn't been out long, to already have over 2,000 signatories. And as I said, I mean, my thought when this was being developed and distributed was, man, it's going to be hard to get people to sign on to this. A lot of people are going to, you know, have to advocate before the Department of Justice on behalf of their own clients.
Right.
And yet lawyers are putting themselves out there because they think that there's a principle that stands above and beyond everything else, that really the system that we all were taught, you know, had to be protected, the system in which, you know, you had people being held accountable regardless of their relationship with any politician in government.
Now, I want to get some of your thoughts on the Stone case, because, you know, sure. Now, where is this now? I mean, you had the original four prosecutors saying we think 7 to 9 years is the recommendation, and judges don't always follow the recommendations, sometimes less, sometimes more. Where does this lead? I know there was a phone yesterday, I guess, they set up a phone call for tomorrow to find out, you know, how unusual is this?
Well, that's also unusual. I think the judge wanted to have a more frank conversation with these attorneys, and find out what the status of this case is now that all the prosecutors resigned and whether the government's prepared to go forward. I will say that what I anticipate, and I wrote a column about this in Politico, a number of days ago, I anticipate that the judge was always going to give him a below-guideline sentence. You know, Judge Jackson usually goes below the guidelines in cases like this. The guidelines were high. So my critique of what Barr did was not based on, you know, okay, necessarily that I'm not necessarily saying that the sentence was you know, should have been 7 to 9 years, but the principle is just why you're intervening. So I think she's going to go below 7 to 9, but I think she's going to be in a tough spot, which is she's going to want to go below 7 to 9 years, but I don't think she's going to want to appear like anything influencer that was potentially improper here. She's going to want there to be public confidence in the verdict, or excuse me, in the sentence. And so I think, you know, I can't speculate exactly as to what she would do, the judge will do, but I wouldn't be surprised if she goes out of her way to suggest that she doesn't give much weight to the Justice Department's recommendation, and that she already had formed a position, you know, and she, you know, as to what she thought the sentence would be, and that their recommendation or change in recommendation didn't, you know, materially impact it.
Yeah, but given the fact that, you know, Stone was such a pain in the neck during the whole trial, and that she had to, you know, kind of gag him a couple of times, to me that'd have been one of those moments where I think he should have gotten a harsher sentence.
Well, you know, here's what I would say. You know, Manafort got a fairly lenient sentence because he was charged with a lot more than Stone was, and he also obstructed justice and, you know, ended up losing his bail status and so forth. And, you know, there's other people like Vanderswan and, you know, and Papadopoulos and others who obviously they cooperated, but nonetheless got
a weekend.
A weekend. So I think there's somewhere below 7 years that would still be a very tough sentence. If she gave Roger Stone 3 years, 4 years, 5 years in prison, you know, it would still send a significant message. I wouldn't be surprised if she did that. But I don't think it really has anything to do with this. But I will just say it's ironic because, and it really goes to show, you know, all of this intervention that was being done by the Justice Department was really being done to please Trump, to try to, you know, deal with his, you know, sort of strong concerns over Stone. It really it wasn't going to move the needle much on a sentence anyways, in my view. I really think that Judge Jackson was going to give this guy a fair sentence anyway. And really, all of this concern and all of these machinations were because Barr is sort of stumbling over himself to do whatever he can to help Trump. Because don't forget, you know, Barr misled the entire country about what was in the Mueller report.
True.
You know, he gave Trump a pass on, for example, the activities related to Ukraine that were the subject of impeachment and a number of other things.
Now, Barr came out last week and said that, you know, Trump's tweeting, you know, keeps him from doing his job or something to that effect. You know, I heard that statement and I'm like, you know, this is something that you would say if you're covering up somebody's crimes and you go, just shut up already while I'm doing this so nobody knows about it. Just shut up already. That's kind of how I took it.
Yeah, the way I took it, it was similar in the sense that I think Barr, it's hard to read Barr as anything other than a real, you know, whether you want to call him a stooge or an ally of Trump's. He's somebody who I think is very carefully carried forward Trump's agenda, and actually I think has done it in a way that is in some ways more concerning than Trump himself. In other words, Trump's a guy who's fairly unsophisticated in the way he acts. He's just like, he reacts. He's not a highly sophisticated guy. Barr, there's an element of deviousness and misleading the public about the Mueller report, you know, misstating his conversations with Mueller and other things. Very, you know, cleverly moving forward Trump's agenda. And I think having Trump tweeting this stuff out only hurts Barr. I think Barr was basically telling him, I got it. You know, Laura Ingraham said this, who's an ally of Trump and Barr's, like basically saying, like, he was telling Trump, I got this. Like, you don't need to say anything. I know.
Just shut up.
Yeah.
You have the right to remain silent. Use it.
Right. You're making it too obvious.
But here's the thing. That's the difference, and your point's taken, the difference between a bull in a china shop and somebody who's really, really, really very bright. And as much as I don't like Bill Barr, he's a very bright guy.
Yeah, remember when he was being questioned by Kamala Harris? You know, he really got out of answering that question. So I grapple with the word suggest, and he never answered her.
Yep.
You know, he was smart. He was able to sidestep questions. I think he's done a very able job of creating, moving forward Trump's agenda. Look, he launched this entire investigation of the investigators of the Mueller report. He found a way to get, you know, he got that U.S. attorney to speak out when the OIG report came out. There's all these things he's done that have been very, I think, clever in moving Trump's agenda forward while giving himself a veneer of plausibility to what he's doing. So I think, you know, he's suddenly getting exposed. And I think what this letter reveals is that there's really no defense to what was done here. And that is, this is the first time Barr has done something that it's very hard to argue was appropriate. Yeah. I mean, this is one, there's no justification.
Yeah, last line I got for you, because, you know, the reason I brought up judges earlier is I saw this story that the National Association of Federal Judges are having an emergency meeting tomorrow because of this. So you've got the prosecutors and the people who are working on one side of it and the judges on the other. It seems like the entire legal system of this country is kind of spasming over what's going on and what they're seeing coming out of this administration and the Department of Justice. And this is scary times, especially as we move into election time.
Yeah, I would also say to you that I think that I would not paint all of Trump's nominees with a single brush. And I think that once someone is nominated and confirmed as a judge and they have a lifetime appointment, many of these people are going to look at this behavior and realize that this harms the system themselves. And in fact, Trump has lost at times in front of his own nominee, who, you know, when he's been up in lawsuits. I think that it's a very the people who are in the judiciary that have been appointed by Trump, you know, many of them are cut from a very different cloth than the people who are in his administration. And, you know, he may not get the complete obedience that he's expecting from his own administration from some of those judicial appointees.
So they may not be kissing the ring. The loyalty may not be there. That's your assessment?
Well, they may be with some, but I don't think that I wouldn't characterize it. I wouldn't expect that if I was Trump.
No.
And he may be disappointed.
I hope you're right, because lifetime appointments are a long time.
Indeed.
There you go. Renato, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Great stuff as always, sir.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
You as well. I think he's spot on. I think the reality is you've got, you know, Trump on one side, the bull in the China shop, and Barr, who's incredible. And this has always been my fear. My fear is that someone really smart comes in and cleans up all of his messes and kind of directs him a little bit. So we'll see where this takes us. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.